Flashman at the Charge by George MacDonald Fraser. Continued. Cassette 3, Side 1.
Fire! He bellowed, and like one huge bark of thunder, the front rank volley crashed out. The smoke billowed back in our faces, and beyond it the foremost horsemen seemed to surge up in a great wave. There was a split second of screaming confusion, with beasts plunging and rearing, a hideous chorus of yells from the riders, and the great line crushed down on the turf before us, the men behind careering into the fallen horses and riders, trying to jump them or pull clear, trampling them, hurtling over them, in a smashing tangle of limbs and bodies. Fire! Roars Campbell above the din, and the pieces of the standing rank crashed together into the press. It seemed to shudder at the impact, and behind it the Russian ranks wheeled and stumbled in confusion, men screaming and going down, horses lashing out blindly, sabres gleaming and flying. As the smoke cleared, there was a great tangled, bloody bank of stricken men and beasts wallowing within a few yards of the kneeling Highlanders. They'll tell you, some of our historians, that Campbell fired before they reached close range. But here's one who can testify that one Russian, with a fur-crested helmet and pale blue tunic, rolled right to within a foot of us. The swarthy Highlander nearest me didn't have to advance a step to plunge his bayonet into the Russian's body. A great yell went up from the 93rd. The front ranks seemed to leap forward, but Campbell was before them, bawling them back. "Damn your eagerness!" cries he. "Stand fast! Reload!" They dropped back, snarling like dogs, and Campbell turned and calmly surveyed the wreckage of the Russian ranks. There were beasts thrashing about everywhere and men crawling blindly away. The din of screaming and groaning was fearful, and a great reek that you could literally see was steaming up from them. Behind, the greater part of the Russian squadrons was turning, reforming, and for a moment I thought they were coming again, but they moved off back towards the heights, closing their ranks as they went.
"Good," says Campbell, and his sword grated back into its scabbard. "You never saw a sight like that going back up the gallow gate, Sir Colin,"
pipes a voice from somewhere, and they began to laugh and cheer and yell their heathenish slogans, shaking their muskets, and Campbell grinned and pulled at his moustache again. He saw me. I hadn't stirred a yard since the charge began, I'd been so petrified, and walked across.
"I'll add a line to my message for Lord Raglan," says he, and looks at me. "You've more colour in your cheeks now, Flashman. Feel exercises with the 93rd must agree with you."
And so, with those kilted devils still holding their ranks, and the Russians dying and moaning before them, I waited while he dictated his message to one of his aides. Now that the terror was past, my belly was aching horribly, and I felt thoroughly ill again, but not so ill that I wasn't able to note and admire the carriage of the retreating Russian cavalry. In charging, I'd noticed how they'd opened their ranks at the canter, and then closed them at the gallop, which isn't easy. Now they were doing the same thing as they retired towards the heights, and I thought, these fellows ain't so slovenly as we thought. I remember thinking they'd perhaps startle Jim the Bear and his light brigade. But most of all, from that moment of aftermath, I can still see vividly that tangled pile of Russian dead, and sprawled out before them the body of an officer, a big, grey-bearded man with the front of his blue tunic soaked in blood, lying on his back with one knee bent up, and his horse standing above him, nuzzling at the dead face. Campbell put a folded paper into my hand and stood shading his eyes with a hand under his bonnet rim as he watched the Russian horse canter up the Causeway Heights. "Poor management," says he. "They'll no come this way again. In the meantime, I've said to Lord Raglan that, in my opinion, the main Russian advance will now be directed north of the causeway, and will doubtless be with artillery and horse against our cavalry. What is it doing sitting yonder? I cannot... But, hello, is that scarlet moving? Hand me that glass, Catanach. See yonder." The Russian cavalry was now topping the Causeway Ridge, vanishing from our view, but on the plain, farther left, perhaps half a mile from us, there was movement in the ranks of our heavy brigade, a sudden uniform twinkle of metal as the squadrons nearest to us turned.
"They're coming this way,"
says someone, and Campbell snapped his glass shut.
"Behind the fair," says he glumly.
I never saw him impatient yet, where other men would get angry and swear. Campbell simply got more melancholy.
"Flashman,
On your way to Lord Raglan, I'll be obliged if you'll present my compliments to General Scarlet or Lord Lucan, whichever comes first in your road, and tell them that, in my opinion, they'll do well to hold the ground they have and prepare for activity on the northern flank. Away with you, sir.
I needed no urging. The further I could get from that plain, the better I'd be suited, for I was certain Campbell was right. Having captured the eastern end of the Causeway Heights and run their cavalry over the central ridge facing us, it was beyond doubt that the Russians would be moving up the valley north of the heights, advancing on the plateau position which we occupied before Sevastopol. God knew what Raglan proposed to do about that, but in the meantime he was holding our cavalry on the southern plain to no good purpose. They hadn't budged an inch to take the retreating Russian cavalry in flank, as they might have done. And now, after the need for their support had passed, the heavies were moving down slowly towards Campbell's position. I rode through their ranks, dragoon guards and a few skins, riding in open order, eyeing me curiously as I galloped through. "That's Flashman, ain't it?" cried someone, but I didn't pause. Ahead of me I could see the little knot of coloured figures, red and blue, of Scarlet and his staff. As I reined up, they were cheering and laughing, and old Scarlet waved his hat to me. "Ho, ho, Flashman!" cries he. "Were you down there with the Sawneys? Capital work, what? That's a bloody nose for Ivan, I say. Ain't it, though, Elliot? Damn fine, damn fine. And where are you off to, Flashman, my son?"
"Message to Lord Raglan, sir," says I. "But Sir Colin Campbell also presents his compliments and advises that you should move no nearer to Balaclava at present."
"Does he, though? Beatson, halt the dragoons, will you? Now then, why not? Lord Lucan has ordered us to support the Turks, you know, in case of Russian movement towards Balaclava."
"Sir Colin expects no further movement there, sir. He bids you look to your northern flank."
And I pointed to the Causeway Heights, only a few hundred yards away. "Anyway, sir, there are no longer any Turks to support. Most of them are probably on the beach by now."
"That's true, begod!"
Scarlet exploded in laughter. He was a fat, cheery old Falstaff, mopping his bald head with a hideously coloured scarf, and then dabbing the sweat from his red cheeks.
"What do you think, Elliot? No point in going down to Campbell that I can see. He and his red shanks don't need support, that's certain."
"True, sir. But there's no sign of Russian movement to our north as yet."
"No," said Scarlet. "That's so. But I trust Campbell's judgment, you know. Clever fella. If he smells Ruskies to our north beyond the heights, well, I don't know. I trust an old hound any day. What?"
He sniffed and mopped himself again, tugging at his puffy white whiskers.
"Tell you what, Elliot, I think we'll just hold on here and see what breaks cover, eh? What do you say to that, Beatson? Flashman? No harm in waiting, is there?"
"He could dig trenches for all I cared. I was already measuring the remaining distance across the plain westward. Once in the gullies, I'd be out of harm's way and could pick my way to Raglan's headquarters at my leisure. North of us, the ground sloping up to the heights to an old vineyard was empty. So was the crest beyond, but the thump of cannon from behind it seemed to be growing closer to my nervous imagination. There was an incessant whine and thump of shot. Beatson was scanning the ridge anxiously through his glass.
"Campbell's right, sir," says he. "They must be up there in the North Valley in strength."
"How do you know?" says Scarlet, goggling.
"The firing, sir. Listen to it. That's not just cannon. There, you hear? That's Whistling Dick. If they have mortars with them, they're not skirmishing."
"My God," says Scarlet. "Well, I'm damned. I can't tell one from another, but if you say so, Beatson, I..."
"Look yonder."
It was one of his young gallopers up in his stirrups with excitement pointing.
"The ridge, sir. Look at 'em. Come."
We looked, and for the second time that day I forgot my gurgling, aching belly in a freezing wave of fear. Slowly topping the crest in a great wave of colour and dancing steel was a long rank of Russian horsemen, and behind them another, and then another, moving at a walk. They came over the ridge as if they were in review, extended line after extended line, and then slowly closed up, halting on the near slope of the ridge, looking down at us. God knows how far their line ran from flank to flank, but there were thousands of them, hanging over us like an ocean roller frozen in the act of breaking. A huge body of blue and silver hussars on the left, and to the right the grey and white of their dragoons.
"By God!" cries Scarlet. "By God, those are Russians, damn 'em!"
"Left about!" Beatson was yelling. "Gray, stand fast. Cunningham, close them up. Inniskillings, close order. Connor, Flynn, keep them there. Curzon, get those squadrons of the 5th up here. Lively now."
Scarlett was sitting gaping at the ridge, damning his eyes and the Russians alternately, until Beatson jerked at his sleeve.
"Sir, we must prepare to receive them. When they take the break off, they'll roll down."
"Receive them?" says Scarlett, coming back to earth. "What's that, Beatson? Damned if I do." He reared up in his stirrups, glaring along to the left, where the Greys' advanced squadrons were being dressed to face the Russian force. "What? What? Connor, what are you about there?" He was gesticulating to the right now, waving his hat. "Keep your damned Irishmen steady there. Wild devils, those. Where's Curzon, eh?"
"Sir, they have the slope of us."
Beatson was gripping Scarlett by the sleeve, rattling urgently in his ear.
"They outflank us, too. I reckon that line's 3 times the length of ours. And when they charge, they can sweep round and take us flank, both sides and front. They'll swallow us, sir, if we break. We must try to hold fast."
"Hold fast, nothing," says Scarlett, grinning all over his great red cheeks. "I didn't come all this way to have some damn Cossack open the ball. Look at them, they're the saucy bastards. What? What? Well, they're there, and we're here, and I'm going to chase the scoundrels all the way to Moscow. What, Elliot? Here, you, Flashman, come to my side, sir." You may gather my emotions at hearing this. I won't attempt to describe them. I stared at this purpling old lunatic in bewilderment, and tried to say something about my message to Raglan, but the impetuous buffoon grabbed at my bridle and hauled me along as he took post in front of his squadrons. "You shall tell Lord Raglan presently that I have engaged a force of enemy cavalry on my front and dispersed them," bawls he. "Beatson, Elliot, see those lines dressed. Where are the royals, eh? Steady there, Grey, steady up in his skillings. Look to that dressing. Flint, keep close to me, Flashman, do you hear? Like enough I'll have something to add to his lordship. Where the devil's Curzon, then? Damn the boy, if it's not women, it's something else. Trumpet up, where are you? Come to my left side. Got your tootler, have you? Capital, splendid." It was unbelievable, this roaring, fat old man waving his hat like some buffer at a cricket match, while Beatson tried to shout sense into him.
"You cannot move from here, sir. It's all uphill. We must hold our ground. There's no other hope."
He pointed uphill frantically.
"Look, they're moving, sir. We must hold fast."
And sure enough, up on the heights a quarter of a mile away, the great Russian line was beginning to advance, shoulder to shoulder, blue and silver and grey, with their sabres at the present. It was a sight to send you squealing for cover. But there I was, trapped at this idiot's elbow, with the squadrons of the Greys hemming us in behind.
"You cannot advance, sir,"
shouts Beatson again. "Can't I, by God!" roars Scarlett, throwing away his hat. "You just watch me!" He lugged out his sabre and waved it. "Ready, Greys? Ready, old skins? Remember Waterloo, you fellows! What? Trumpeter, sound the thing, whatever it is. Oh, the devil! Come on, Flashman! Tally-ho!" And he dug in his heels, gave one final yell of, "Come on, you fellas!" and set his horse at the hill like a madman. There was a huge crashing shout from behind. The squadrons leaped forward. My horse reared, and I found myself galloping along almost up Scarlett's dock, with Beatson at my elbow shouting,
"Oh, what the blazes! Charge! Trumpeter, charge, charge, charge!"
They were all stark raving mad, of course. When I think of them, and me, God help me, tearing up that hill, and that overwhelming force lurching down towards us, gathering speed with every step, I realize that there's no end to human folly, or human luck either. It was ridiculous, it was nonsense, that old red-faced pantaloon who'd never fired a shot or swung a saber in action before, and was fit for nothing but whipping off hounds, urging his charger up that hill with the whole heavy brigade at his heels, and poor old suffering Flashy jammed in between, with nothing to do but hope to God that by the time the two irresistible forces met, I'd be somewhere back in the mob behind. And the brutes were enjoying it, too. Those crazy Ulstermen were whooping like Apaches, and the Greys, as they thundered forward, began to make that hideous droning noise deep in their throats. I let them come up on my flanks, their front rank hemming me in with glaring faces and glittering blades on either side. Scarlett was yards ahead, brandishing his sabre and shouting.
The Russian mass was at the gallop, sweeping towards us like a great blue wave. And then, in an instant, we were surging into them, men yelling, horses screaming, steel clashing all round. And I was clinging like a limpet to my horse's right side, Cheyenne fashion, left hand in the mane and right clutching my Adam's revolver. I wasn't breaking surface in that melee if I could help it. There were greys all round me, yelling and cursing, slashing with their sabres at the hairy blue coats. "Give him the point! The point!" yelled a voice, and I saw a grey's trooper dashing the hilt of his sword into a bearded face and then driving his point into the falling man's body. I let fly at a Russian in the press, and the shot took him in the neck, I think. Then I was dashed aside and swept away in the whirl of fighting, keeping my head ducked low, squeezing my trigger whenever I saw a blue or grey tunic, and praying feverishly that no chance slash would sweep me from the saddle. I suppose it lasted 5 or 10 minutes, I don't know. It seemed only a few seconds, and then the whole mass was struggling up the hill, and myself roaring and blaspheming with the best of them. My revolver was empty, my hat was gone, so I dragged out my sabre, bawling with pretended fury and seeing nothing but grey horses, gathered that I was safe. "Come on," I roared, "come on, into the bastards, cut them to bits." I made my horse rear and waved my sword, and as a stricken Russian came blundering through the mob, I lunged at him full force, missed, and finished up skewering a fallen horse. The wrench nearly took me out of my saddle, but I wasn't letting that sabre go, not for anything. And as I tugged it free, there was a tremendous cheering set up. "Huzzah! Huzzah! Huzzah!" And suddenly there were no Russians among us. Scarlet, 20 yards away, was standing in his stirrups, waving a blood-stained sabre and yelling his head off. The greys were shaking their hats and their fists, and the rout of that great mass of enemy cavalry was trailing away towards the crest. "They're beat!" cries Scarlet. "They're beat. Well done, you fellas. What, Bidson? Eh, Elliot? Can't charge uphill, eh? Damn 'em, we did it. Hurrah!" Now, it is a solemn fact, but I'll swear I didn't see above a dozen corpses on the ground around me as the greys reordered their squadrons, and the skins closed in on the right, with the royals coming up behind. I still don't understand it, why the Russians, with the hill behind them, didn't sweep us all away with great slaughter, or why, breaking as they did, they weren't cut to pieces by our sabres. Except that I remember one or two of the greys complaining that they hadn't been able to make their cuts tell. They just bounced off the Russian tunics. Anyway, the Ruskies broke, thank heaven, and away beneath us, to our left, the Light Brigade was setting up a tremendous cheer, and it was echoing along the ridge to our left, and on the greater heights beyond. "Well done," shouts Scarlet. "Well done, you greys. Well done, Flashman. You are a gallant fellow, what? Eh? That'll show that damn Nicholas, what? Now then, Flashman, off with you to Lord Raglan. Tell him we've, well, set about these chaps and driven them off, you see? And that I shall hold my position, what? Until further orders. Understand? Capital." He shook with laughter and hauled out his coloured scarf for another mop at his streaming face. "Tell you what, Flashman, I don't know much about fighting, but it strikes me this Russian business is like hunting in Ireland, confused and primitive, what? But damned interesting." I reported his words to Raglan exactly as he spoke them, and the whole staff laughed with delight, the idiots. Of course, they were safe enough, snug on the top of the Sapoon Ridge, which lay at the western end of Causeway Heights. And I promise you I'd taken my time getting there. I'd ridden like hell on my spent horse from the causeway, across the northwest corner of the plain, when Scarlet dismissed me, but once into the safety of the gullies, with the noise of Russian gunfire safely in the distance, I had dismounted to get my breath, quiet my trembling heartstrings, and try to ease my wind-gripped bowels, again without success. I was a pretty bedraggled figure, I suppose, by the time I came to the top of Sapoon, but at least I had a bloody sabre, artlessly displayed. Lou Nolan's eyes narrowed, and he swore enviously at the sight. He wasn't to know it had come from a dead Russian horse. Raglan was beaming, as well he might be, and demanded details of the action I'd seen. So I gave him fairly offhand, saying I thought the Highlanders had behaved pretty well. "Yes, and if we'd just followed up with cavalry, we might have regained the whole causeway by now," pipes Nolan, at which Airy told him to be silent, and Raglan looked fairly stuffy. As for the heavies, well, they'd seen all that, but I said it had been warm work, and Ivan had got his belly full from what I could see. "Gad, Flashy, you have all the luck," cries Lou, slapping his thigh, and Raglan clapped me on the shoulder. "Well done, Flashman," says he. "Two actions today, and you've been in the thick of both. I fear you have been neglecting your staff duties in your eagerness to be at the enemy, eh?" And he gave me his quizzical beam, the old fool. "Well, we shall say no more about that." I looked confused and went red and muttered something about not being able to abide these damned Ruskies, and they all laughed again and said that was old Flashy. And the young gallopers, the pink-cheeked lads, looked at me with awe. If it hadn't been for my aching belly, I'd have been ready to enjoy myself now that the horror of the morning was past and the cold sweat of reaction hadn't had a chance to set in. I'd come through again, I told myself, twice, no less, and with new laurels. For although we were too close to events just then to know what would be said later, well, how many chaps have you heard of who stood with the thin red line and took part in the charge of the heavy brigade? None, because I'm the only one. Damned unwilling and full of shakes, but still, I've dined out on it for years. That, and the other thing that was to follow. But in the meantime, I was just thanking my stars for safety and rubbing my inflamed guts. Someone said later that Flashman was more anxious about his bowels than he was about the Russians, and had taken part in all the charges to try to ease his wind. I sat there with the staff, gulping and massaging, happy to be out of the battle and taking a quiet interest, while Lord Raglan and his team of idiots continued to direct the fortunes of the day. Now, of that morning at Balaclava, I've told you what I remember as faithfully as I can, and if it doesn't tally with what you read elsewhere, I can't help it. Maybe I'm wrong, or maybe the military historians are. You must make your own choice. For example, I've read since that there were Turks on both flanks of Campbell's Highlanders, whereas I remember 'em only on the left flank. Again, my impression of the heavy brigade action is that it began and ended in a flash, but I gather it must have taken Scarlett some little time to turn and dress his squadrons. I don't remember that. It's certain that Lucan was on hand when the charge began, and I've been told he actually gave the word to advance. Well, I never even saw him. So, there you are. It just shows that no one can see everything. I mention this because, while my impressions of the early morning are fairly vague and consist of a series of coloured and horrid pictures, I'm in no doubt about what took place in the late forenoon. That is etched forever. I can shut my eyes and see it all, and feel a griping pain ebbing and clawing at my guts. Perhaps that sharpened my senses, who knows? Anyway, I have it all clear, not only what happened, but what caused it to happen. I know, better than anyone else who ever lived, why the Light Brigade was launched on its famous charge, because I was the man responsible, and it wasn't wholly an accident. That's not to say I'm to blame. If blame there is, it belongs to Raglan, the kind, honourable, vain old man. Not to Lucan, or to Cardigan, or to Nolan, or to Airy, or even to my humble self. We just played our little parts. But blame? I can't even hold it against Raglan. Not now. Of course, your historians and critics and hypocrites are full of virtuous zeal to find out who was at fault, and wag their heads and say, "Ah, you see," and tell him what should have been done from the safety of their studies and lecture rooms. But I was there, you see, and while I could have wrung Raglan's neck or blown him from the muzzle of a gun at the time, well, it's all by now, and we either survived it or we didn't. Proving someone guilty won't bring the 600 to life again. Most of them would be dead by now anyway, and they wouldn't blame anyone. What did that trooper of the 17th say afterwards? "We're ready to go in again." Good luck to him, I say. Once was enough for me. But don't you understand? Nobody else has the right to talk of blame or blunders. Just us, the living and the dead. It was our Indaba. Mind you, I could kick Raglan's arse for him, and me own. I sat up there on the Sapoon Crest, feeling bloody sick and tired, refusing the sandwiches that Billy Russell offered me, and listening to Lou Nolan's muttered tirade about the misconduct of the battle so far. I hadn't much patience with him. He hadn't been risking his neck along with Campbell and Scarlet, although he no doubt wished he had, but in my shaken state, I wasn't ready to argue. Anyway, he was fulminating against Lucan and Cardigan and Raglan, mostly, which was all right by me.
If Cardigan had taken in the lights when the heavies were breaking up the Ruskies, we'd have smashed them all by this, says he. But he wouldn't budge, damn him. He's as bad as Lucan. Won't budge without orders, delivered in the proper form, with nice salutes, and yes, my lord, and if your lordship pleases. Christ, cavalry leaders, Cromwell had turned in his grave, bad, says to him. And look at Raglan yonder, does he know what to do? He'd got two brigades of the best horsemen in Europe itching to use their sabres, and in front of him a Russian army that's shaking in its boots after the mauling Campbell and Scarlet have given him. But he sits there sending messages to the infantry. The infantry, be God, that are still getting out of their beds somewhere. Jesus, it makes me sick.
He was in a fine taking, but I didn't mind him much. At the same time, looking down on the panorama beneath us, I could see there was something in what he said. I'm not Hannibal, but I picked up a wrinkle or two in my time about ground and movement, and it looked to me as though Raglan had it in his grasp to do the Russians some no good, and maybe even hand them a splendid licking, if he felt like it. Not that I cared, you understand. I'd had enough, and was all for a quiet life for everybody. But anyway, this is how the land lay. The sapoon on which we stood is a great bluff rising hundreds of feet above the plain. Looking east from it, you see below you a shallow valley, perhaps 2 miles long and half a mile broad. To the north, there's a little clump of heights on which the Russians had established guns to command that side of the valley. On the south, the valley is bounded by the long spine of the Causeway Heights, running east from the sapoon for 2 or 3 miles. The far end of the valley was fairly hazy, even with the strong sunlight, but you could see the Russians there as thick as fleas on a dog's back. Guns, infantry, cavalry, everything, except Tsar Nick himself. Tiny puppets in the distance, just holding their ground. They had guns on the causeway, too, pointing north. As I watched, I saw the nearest team of them unlimbering just beside the spot where the heavy's charge had ended. So, there it was, plain as a pool table, a fine empty valley with the main force of the Russians at the far end of it, and us at the near end, but with Ruskies on the heights to either side, guns and sharpshooters both. You could see the grey uniforms of their infantry moving among the cannon down on the causeway, not a mile and a half away. Directly beneath where I stood, at the near end of the valley, our cavalry had taken up station just north of the causeway. The heavies slightly nearer the sapoon and to the right, the lights just ahead of them and slightly left. They looked as though you could have lobbed a stone into the middle of them. I could easily make out Cardigan threading his way behind the ranks of the 17th, and Lucan with his gallopers, and old Scarlet with his bright scarf thrown over one shoulder of his coat. They were all sitting out there waiting, tiny figures in blue and scarlet and green, with here and there a plumed hat and an occasional bandage. I noticed one trooper of the skins binding a stocking onto the forefoot of his charger, the little dark green figure crouched down at the horse's hooves. The distant pipe of voices drifted up from the plain, and from the far end of the causeway a popping of musketry. For the rest, it was all calm and still, and it was this tranquillity that was driving Lou to a frenzy, the bloodthirsty young imbecile. "Well," thinks I, "there they all are, doing nothing and taking no harm. Let 'em be and let's go." For it was plain to see the Ruskies were going to make no advance up the valley towards the sapoon. They'd had their fill for the day, and were content to hold the far end of the valley and the heights either side. But Raglan and Airy were forever turning their glasses on the causeway at the Russian artillery and infantry moving among the redoubts they'd captured from the Turks. I gathered both our infantry and cavalry down in the plain should have been moving to push them up, but nothing was happening, and Raglan was getting the frets. "Why does not Lord Lucan move?" I heard him say once, and again, "He has the order, what delays him now?" Knowing Lucan, I could guess he was huffing and puffing and laying the blame on someone else. Raglan kept sending gallopers down, Lou among them, to tell Lucan and the infantry commanders to get on with it. But
but they seemed maddeningly obtuse about his orders and wanted to wait for our infantry to come up, and it was this delay that was fretting Raglan and sending Lou half crazy.
"Why doesn't Raglan make a move, dammit?"
says he, coming over to Billy Russell and me after reporting back to Raglan. "It's too bad. If he would give him one clear, simple command to push in and sweep those fellas off the causeway, oh, my God, and he won't listen to me. I'm a young pup green behind the ears. The cavalry alone could do it in 5 minutes. It's about time Cardigan earned his general's pay anyway." I approved heartily of that myself every time I heard Cardigan's name mentioned or saw his hateful, boozy, vulture face. I remember that vile scene in Elspeth's bedroom and felt my fury boiling up. Several times it had occurred to me on the campaign that it would be a capital thing if he could be induced into action, where he might well be hit between the legs and so have his brains blown out. But he'd not looked like taking a scratch so far, and there seemed scant chance of it today. I heard Raglan snapping his glass shut with impatience and saying to Airy, "I despair almost of moving our horse. It looks as though we shall have to rely on Cambridge alone whenever his infantry come up. Oh, this is vexing. We shall accomplish nothing against the causeway positions at this rate." And just at that moment, someone sang out, "My lord, see there, the guns are moving. The guns in the second redoubt. The Cossacks are getting them out." Sure enough, there were Russian horsemen limbering up away down the causeway crest, tugging at a little toy cannon in the captured Turkish emplacement. They had tackles on it and were obviously intent on carrying it off to the main Russian army. Raglan stared at it through his glass, his face working.
"Harry," cries he, "this is intolerable. What is Lucan thinking of? Why, these fellows will clear the guns away before our advance begins." "He's waiting for Cambridge, I suppose, my lord," says Airy, and Raglan swore for once and continued to gaze fretfully down on the causeway.
Lou was writhing with impatience in his saddle. "Oh, Christ," he moaned softly.
"Send in Cardigan, man. Never mind the bloody infantry. Send in the lights."
"Good idea," thinks I. "Let Jim the Bear skirmish into the redoubts and get a Cossack lance where it'll do most good." So you may say it was out of pure malice towards Cardigan that I piped up, taking care that my back was to Raglan, but talking loud enough for him to hear,
"There goes our record. Wellington never lost a gun, you know."
I've heard since from a galloper who was at Raglan's side that it was those words, invoking the comparison with his god, Wellington, that stung him into action, that he started like a man shot, that his face worked, and he jerked at his bridle convulsively. Maybe he'd have made up his mind without my help, but I'll be honest and say that I doubt it. He'd have waited for the infantry. As it was, he went pale, and then red, and snapped out, "Airy, another message to Lord Lucan. We can delay no longer. He must move without the infantry. Tell him, he is to advance the cavalry rapidly to the front, to prevent the enemy carrying off the guns, to follow the enemy and prevent them. Yes, yes. He may take troop horse artillery at his discretion. There, that will do. You have it, Airy. Read it back, if you please." I see it so clearly still. Airy's head bent over the paper, jabbing at the words with his pencil as he read back, more or less in Raglan's words, certainly the same sense. Nolan's face alight with joy beside me.
At last, thank God," he was muttering.
And Raglan sitting, nodding carefully. Then he cried out,
"Good, it is to be acted on at once. Make that clear." "Ah, that's me darling," whispers Lou and nudged me. "Well done, Flashy, me boy, you've got him moving."
"Send it immediately," Raglan was telling Airy. "Oh, and notify Lord Lucan that there are French cavalry on his left. And surely that should suffice."
And he opened his glass again, looking down at Causeway Heights.
"Send the fastest galloper."
I had a moment's apprehension of that. Having started the ball, I'd no wish to be involved, but Raglan added, "Where is Nolan?" "Yes, Nolan." And Lou, beside himself with excitement, wheeled his horse beside Airy, grabbed at the paper, tucked it in his gauntlet, smacked down his forage cap, threw Raglan the fastest of salutes, and would have been off like a shot, but Raglan stayed him, repeating that the message was of the utmost importance, that it was to be delivered with all haste to Lucan personally, and that it was vital to act at once, before the Ruskies could make off with our guns. All unnecessary repetition, of course, and Lou was in a fever, going pink with impatience.
Away, then,
cries Raglan at last, and Lou was over the brow in a twinkling with a flurry of dust. Showy devil. And Raglan shouting after him,
at once, Nolan, tell Lord Lucan at once, you understand.
That's how they sent Nolan off, that and no more, on my oath. And so I come to the point with which I began this memoir, with Raglan having a second thought and shouting to Airy to send after him, and Airy looking round and myself retiring modestly, you remember, and Airy spotting me and gesturing me violently up beside him. Well, you know what I thought of the unreasoning premonition that I had that this would be the ultimate terror of that memorable day in which I had, much against my will, already been charged at by and charged against overwhelming hordes of Russians. There was nothing, really, to be agitated about up there on the heights. I was merely to be sent after Nolan with some additional correction. But I felt the finger of doom on me. I don't know why, as I scrambled aboard a fresh horse with Raglan and Airy clamouring at me.
Flashman, says Raglan, Nolan must make it clear to Lord Lucan. He is to behave defensively and attempt nothing against his better judgment. Do you understand me?
Well, I understood the words, but what the hell Lucan was expected to make them, I couldn't see. Told to advance, to attack the enemy, and yet to act defensively. But it was nothing to me. I repeated the order word for word, making sure Airy could hear me, and then went over the bluff after Lou. It was as steep as hell's half acre, like a seaside sand cliff shot across by grassy ridges. At any other time I'd have picked my way down nice and leisurely, but with Raglan and the rest looking down, and in full view of our cavalry on the plain, I'd no choice but to go hell for leather. Besides, I wasn't going to let that cocky little pimp Nolan distance me. I may not be proud of much, but I fancied myself against any galloper in the army, and was determined to overtake him before he reached Lucan. So down I went, with the game little mare under me skipping like a mountain goat, sliding on her haunches, careering headlong, and myself clinging on with my knees aching and my hands on the mane, jolting and swaying wildly, and in the tail of my eye Lou's red cap jerking crazily on the escarpment below. I was the better horseman. He wasn't 20 yards out on the level when I touched the bottom and went after him like a bolt, yelling to him to hold on. He heard me and reined up, cursing, and demanded to know what was the matter.
On with you,
cries I as I came alongside, and as we galloped I shouted my message. He couldn't make it out, but had to pluck the note from his glove and squinted it while he rode.
What the hell does it mean in the first place?
Cries he. It says here, advance rapidly to the front. Well, God love us, the guns ain't in front. They're in flank front if they're anywhere.
Search me, I shouted. But he says, look on, is to act defensively and undertake nothing against his better judgment. So there.
Defensive, cries Lou. Defensive be damned. He must have said offensive. How the hell could he attack defensively? And this order says nothing about Lucan's better judgment. For one thing, he's got no more judgment than Mulligan's bull pup.
Well, that's what Raglan said, I shouted. You're bound to deliver it.
Ah, damn them all, what a set of old women. He dug in his spurs, head down, shouting across to me as we raced towards the rear squadrons of the heavies. They don't know their minds from one minute to the next. I tell you, Flash, that old ninny Raglan will hinder the cavalry at all costs, and Lucan's not a whit better. What do they think horse soldiers are for? Well, Lucan shall have his order and be damned to them. I eased up as we shot through the ranks of the greys, letting him go ahead. He went streaking through the heavies and across the intervening space towards the lights. I'd no wish to be dragged into the discussion that would inevitably ensue with Lucan, who had to have every order explained to him 3 times at least. But I supposed I ought to be on hand, so I cantered easily up to the 4th lights, and there was George Paget again, wanting to know what was up.
"You're advancing shortly," says I.
"And damned high time, too," says he. "Got a cheroot, Flash? I haven't a weed to my name." I gave him one, and he squinted at me. "You're looking peaky," says he. "Anything wrong?"
"Bowls," says I. "Damn all Russian champagne. Where's Lord Lucan?"
He pointed, and I saw Lucan out ahead of the lights, with some galloper beside him, and Nolan just reining up.
Lou was saluting and handing him the paper, and while Lucan pored over it, I looked about me. It was drowsy and close down here on the plain after the breezy heights of the Sapoon, hardly a breath of wind, and the flies buzzing round the horses' heads, and the heavy smell of dung and leather. I suddenly realized I was damned tired and my belly wouldn't lie quiet again. I grunted in reply to George's questions and took stock of the brigade, squirming uncomfortably in my saddle. There were the cherry pickers in front, all very spruce in blue and pink, with their pelisses trailing. To their right, the mortarboard helmets and blue tunics of the 17th, with their lances at rest and the little red point plumes hanging limp. To their right again, not far from where Lucan was sitting, the 13th lights, with the great Lord Cardigan himself out at the fore, sitting very aloof and alone, and affecting not to notice Lucan and Nolan, who weren't above 20 yards from him. Suddenly I was aware of Lucan's voice raised, and trotted away from George in that direction. It looked as though Lou would need some help in getting the message into his lordship's thick skull. I saw Lucan look in my direction, and just at that moment, as I was passing the 17th, someone called out, "Hello, there's old Flashy. Now we'll see some fun. What's the row, Flash?" This sort of thing happens when one is generally admired. I replied with a nonchalant wave of the hand and sang out, "Tally-ho, you fellas! You'll have all the fun you want presently." At which they laughed, and I saw Tubby Morris grinning across at me. And then I heard Lucan's voice, clear as a bugle. "Guns, sir? What guns, may I ask? I can see no guns." He was looking up the valley, his hand shading his eyes, and when I looked, by God, you couldn't see the redoubt where the Ruskies had been limbering up to haul the guns away. Just the long slope of Causeway Heights, and the Russian infantry uncomfortably close. "Well, sir," cries Lucan, "what guns do you mean?" I could see Lou's face working. He was scarlet with fury, and his hand was shaking as he came up by Lucan's shoulder, pointing along the line of the causeway. "There, my lord, you see, there are the guns. There is your enemy." He brayed out as though he was addressing a dirty trooper, and Lucan stiffened as though he'd been hit. He looked as though he would lose his temper, but then he commanded himself, and Lou wheeled abruptly away and cantered off, making straight for me, where I was sitting to the right of the 17th. He was shaking with passion, and as he drew abreast of me, he rasped out, "The bloody fool! Does he want to sit in his great fat ass all day and every day?" "Lou," says I, pretty sharp, "did you tell him he was to act defensively and at his own discretion?" "Tell him," says he, baring his teeth in a savage grin. "By Christ, I told him 3 times over, as if that bastard needs telling to act defensively. He's capable of nothing else. Well, he's got his bloody orders. Now let's see how he carries them out."